Hi, this is Kai Rizdahl with a special Marketplace podcast. When President Obama took the oath of office 4 years ago, there had been a single word floating around out there that had pretty much been the theme of his long campaign, the idea that he'd been running on: hope. A lot of things have changed in this country and the economy since then, including, perhaps, how people think about that word. So we're asking people whose job it is to use words what hope might mean right now. Here's Pulitzer Prize winner Jeffrey Eugenides.
Can I say something bad about hope? I know we're all supposed to be for it, but hope isn't always such a good thing. There's this guy I know named Ted who's on Match.com. Ted's 54. On the site, he's 41. He's looking for a woman with a nice personality between 22 and 30. Ted's between jobs. He's living with his brother-in-law in the basement in Tempe, Arizona. Ted's likes are pistol fishing, barbecue, and Levon Helm's middle period. Who would deny Ted's right to find love? Only what happens is, when semi-miraculously this woman named Arlene responds to Ted's ad and they go out for barbecue, it further happens that Arlene is actually way into Levon Helm, so that they both end up a month later in bed, softly singing the lyrics of Watermelon Time in Georgia to each other. It turns out that Ted continues to go on Match.com in the interim to see if there's anyone else out there, anyone better. Ted's got hope. In this economy, hope's like anything else. When it comes to love, a savvy consumer can always get an upgrade. But hope isn't an escape clause. It isn't a getaway car. Hope's more like telling the girl you want to marry how great a husband you'll be, and then going and being that person. You can shout and sloganeer about hope all you want, but it won't matter. Hope isn't wishful thinking. It's full of requirements.
The most recent book from Jeffrey Eugenides is called The Marriage Plot.
What does hope mean anymore?
Author Margaret Atwood.
In some ways, it's a pointless question, for hope is built in, shaped by our Pleistocene ancestors and their practical hopes, for instance, that there might be a tasty mastodon around the next corner. Every time you open your email and find a message, it's a hope fulfilled, the hope that the universe will acknowledge you, which is why both emails and hope are seductive. But perhaps you're wondering about the future, that land of dreams and nightmares and hope that doesn't exist yet. Maybe you are calculating the effects of global warming, those floods and fires we've been warned about and which are now manifesting. Or you're worried about overpopulation. Can the planet really sustain 10 billion people? Or pondering the death of the ocean and the blue-green algae that makes most of the oxygen we breathe. Or you're obsessing over the world financial crisis or the widening gap between the elite haves and the slave-like have-nots or the prevalence of cybercrime. All are cause for concern. With ingenuity, inventiveness, and luck, all stand a chance of being mitigated. But without hope, they don't. Some hopes are groundless, needless to say. Gamblers are very hopeful, as are bank robbers. Second marriages, said Oscar Wilde, are the triumph of hope over experience. But where there is no hope, there is merely grim acceptance, or else despair. And neither of those has ever inspired a new creation or motivated anyone to dig his way out of a dungeon. What hope means today, however, is what it's always meant. Where there is hope, there's more hope. And in view of the dire predictions we face, hope is the very least we need to keep going.
Margaret Atwood's latest book is called Erase Me.
Hope is living in a city of second chances.
Author and journalist Hector Tobar.
I know this because I was born and raised in L.A., the capital city of American second acts, a city where people come from Korea, from Louisiana, from El Salvador, and many other places in search of a second chance at freedom and prosperity. In Los Angeles, we have a magical factory system of second acts. My father wandered into one of these places on Hollywood Boulevard in 1962. He went in, a 21-year-old Guatemalan busboy with a fourth-grade education, and came out a fluent English speaker on his way to college. It was the night school at Hollywood High. Yes, there is poverty in Los Angeles, but we are not yet living, and perhaps never will live, in the kind of grim, hopeless landscape of Dickens. I know a young man who was shot and paralyzed a decade ago while stealing a case of beer from a liquor store. He was in a gang then, a tough teenager who later shot someone from his wheelchair. My friend, the paraplegic, was charged with assault, but spared jail time by a benevolent judge. This one act of benevolence led my friend to that other factory of second chances we call community college. And then to the next level of reinvention called the State University, where he eventually earned his master's degree in, of all things, medieval literature. These days, he teaches kids to write. In Los Angeles and its great sprawl of suburbs, this is not an unusual story. Go to your average continuation school, and you'll find at least two or three kids in every classroom who are about to slingshot themselves back into the regular education system. That's what hope is. Hope is living in a city of second chances.
Hector Tobar is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author.
We dream on our backs.
And here's poet Tracy K. Smith.
Eyes shut to the world. Dreams carry us away, but when we wake from them, we're right back where we were when we lay down. For all but the most exceptional of people, dreams keep us from stirring, from making a peep. I'm tired of dreams. I'm tired of what we mean when we tell kids, particularly the ones who seem to be up against the most insurmountable odds, to dream big. What can dreaming really do to help a person prevail against the many perils of poverty and injustice? And I'm tired of the dream that flickers in the mind's eye whenever anyone alludes to the values this nation was founded upon. How relevant is the notion that hard work is all it takes to get ahead in the era of reality TV, Citizens United, and widespread acceptance of the idea that wealth equals worth? As far as I'm concerned, it's time to wake up. Enter Hope, another story altogether. Hope is not about receiving, about being the beneficiary of some nebulous good fortune. It's about putting desire into action. Hope is an idea with an engine. Whenever I hear people disparaging the notion of hope, and I heard it a lot in the years following the 2008 election, I think how used we've gotten to the symbols of action and how far those symbols sit from action itself. Like us on Facebook. And we do. We most certainly do. Then we scroll ahead and disappear back into our private lives. But the hope I'm talking about isn't a symbol. It sits well beneath the surface of language and requires us to unravel what we say, to decode what we are routinely told, to verify what we are only just beginning to think. Moreover, it requires us to keep at it, to remain awake to the world. Hope makes us agents in our own fates. Hope defies us to sit back and wait. It says, buckle down, gather steam. Hope denies us retreat to the dream.
Tracy K. Smith won the Pulitzer Prize for poetry last year. Her latest collection is called Life on Mars. You can check out all of the author series online at our website. It's marketplace.org.